The Iran deal was, in fact, the worst diplomatic debacle in American history. So I might imagine they would take me seriously that when I assure them today that if you cross us, our allies or our partners, yes, there will indeed be hell to pay.
Our country has never done better, and do we love our military? Our military is building, is literally being completely rebuilt. We are completely rebuilding our military. It was very depleted, as you know. A lot of the military folks can tell you, and it is being rebuilt to a level that we have never seen before.
If at any point we determine that the regime is expanding its enrichment activities, the United States stands ready to pursue a panoply of options, whatever may be necessary and appropriate, to ensure the regime bears serious consequences for this action.
Hello, you're listening to the Watchman's Cry News from the Wall and the Issues of Life, the program that visits world events and the issues that affect God's people in these end times.
Hello, my friends. You're listening to the Watchman's Cry News from the Wall and the Issues of Life. I'm Nathan Liao, and the website is watchmanscry.com. Today, we're going to be talking about the coming war. I don't know how else to say it than to just say it, but war is coming. War's coming, folks. Not just a regular war, not just a localized regional war, but a war that could end up exploding the entire planet. The pieces are coming together, and it's amazing how, in the last few weeks, this thing has been escalating. And for those of you who are paying attention, for those of you that are watching this thing in real time, it doesn't look like there's going to be a de-escalation. And the things that I was very concerned about a few years ago are now coming to fruition. The war with Iran, the war with Russia is going to come, war with China. And today I'm going to talk about the war that is coming. I'm going to talk about the challenges that we face. And I'm also going to explain how bad this war may be with Iran. The pieces are coming together. The developments are occurring quickly. They're moving quickly. And it looks like this is it, folks. Now, if for some reason the Lord intervenes and brings peace or a delay, praise God. I'll take it. And I'm sure many of you will take it, but we also have to plan for the possibility that it may not happen. And in doing so, we also have to make sure that we are vigilant. I want to challenge all of you to maintain your vigilance and also to not examine current events and the developments only through the eyes of the natural man. We have to be able to look through it through the lens of the Spirit, of Bible prophecy, of the Scriptures. We have to examine it as God's people, not like those who exist on the earth who live for the beast, but as God's remnant. The war is coming, folks. We have been discussing this for years, and now here we are at the very brink. The eve of destruction has arrived.
Now, in the previous program, I stated that we can find Iran in the Bible,
as well as the United States,
and I maintain that. I do know that there are evangelicals out there who have a differing opinion about who the players are and about who Babylon is. But in my opinion, I do believe that the United States of America is Mystery Babylon. When we look at the attributes of Mystery Babylon, as it says in Revelation chapter 17 and 18, and in Jeremiah 50 and 51, it spells it out, folks. I really believe it tells us that America is Babylon because the harlot rides on top of the beast. The harlot is Mystery Babylon, who calls herself great, who is adorned in scarlet, linen, and purple, which mirrors the red, white, and blue. We could do an entire program about it. There are books that have been written about it, and for the most part, the majority of you have also come to terms with that, and the majority of you are on the same page as far as Babylon America. So when we consider Babylon America in the end times, and when we consider the chain of events that are going to take a nation that was once a regular nation into perdition, where the nation morphs and changes and transforms into a new type of country, it becomes real apparent that what we're observing taking place in the United States right now does fall under that.
And over the past 10 years, I have come to you sharing those things. We've talked about them. We've discussed the chain of events that we expected would come. We looked into the scriptures and we looked at Bible prophecy, as well as some of the prophetic dreams and visions that I have had as a watchman and that some of you have had, as well as others. So how's it going to play out? Well, that's one of the things that we observe, that we study, and that we try to make sense out of. Because there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of deception out there, and my heart's desire is to offset the deception and to battle the deception and to bring truth and light to the table, to bring accuracy and reality to the table. There's a lot of confusion in the church right now because, well, they're seeing Donald Trump as something quite different than what I'm observing. And there is a large portion of the evangelical community that sees Donald J. Trump as an individual and a person that he is not. And I've had to call it out, and I must call it out, because we are watching a great deception even right now. It is a production. It is a show. It is theater. It is not an accident that Donald Trump is playing this role. We already have too much evidence now. It's too obvious. Donald Trump recruited John Bolton to be his national security advisor, one of the biggest war hawks in United States history.
The Iran deal was, in fact, the worst diplomatic debacle. So I might imagine they would take me seriously when I assure them today that if you cross us, our allies, or our partners, yes, there will indeed be hell to pay. There will indeed be hell to pay. There will indeed be hell to pay.
The biggest war hawk that got the United States into several never-ending wars based on false information that cost trillions and trillions of dollars and resulted in the deaths and the maiming and the ruin of a lot of American service people, soldiers, who joined the military with good motives to want to do something that was good, and they were used as fodder. They were used as throwaways. They were used as human sacrifice by John Bolton for the cause of the military-industrial complex and the bankers and the oil barons and dark spirits and subterranean fallen angels and demon entities, the dark side. Donald Trump recruited John Bolton. And for people to still ascribe and believe that Trump has said he's going to drain the swamp when he hired a war hawk who is taking us to war right now, we are at the eve of World War III. We are at the eve of dead people, dead American service people. To die for what? For John Bolton, for his war plans, for insanity. So for people to try to claim that Donald Trump is going to drain the swamp, look at what the whole world is talking about. Look at what world leaders are talking about. NATO. What are they all talking about? The war that Donald Trump's about to start.
So let's see what happens.
So
you cannot let Iran have nuclear weapons.
I want to read you something Lindsey Graham said.
Okay.
Your friend Lindsey Graham.
Yes.
He was in a magazine profile, and he reported on a conversation he had with you, and he said that you said to him, the trouble with you, Lindsey, is you want to invade everywhere except the places I want to invade.
Well.
So my question is, where does he want to invade? But more importantly, where do you want to invade?
I want to invade if I have to.
I know that some people are saying Trump doesn't want it because he keeps saying he doesn't want it. And he keeps employing John Bolton? Really? And then on top of that, he has Mike Pompeo, ex-CIA and now Secretary of State. Pompeo, who is also a war hawk. And Pompeo, by the way, went to the Bilderberg meetings just a few weeks ago. And you know who accompanied him? He was with Kissinger, Henry Kissinger. That guy who was Obama's buddy. When Obama was president and Kissinger met, I used to see the alternative media have a cowl about it. Look at Kissinger meeting with Obama. Those devil man. Obama's the devil. Obama's the Antichrist because he's meeting with Kissinger. Well, when Trump got elected, Kissinger visited him at his high-rise penthouse, the Trump Tower. And then just a few weeks ago, Kissinger went to the Bilderberg meetings with Pompeo. And guess who else accompanied, folks? Jared Kushner went to the Bilderberg meetings. Kushner, Trump's son-in-law.
Many of the world's most powerful and wealthy people are coming together in Switzerland for the 67th Bilderberg meeting. Now, their executives from finance, defense, to tech will all meet, and now we know Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, as well as White House advisor Jared Kushner, will be there as well. For more, return to former U.S. diplomat Jim Jotras. Jim, thank you for joining me on this.
Thank you.
67 years of this. How much power does this group really have?
Look, as you said, you've got everybody here. You've got government. You've got intelligence agencies, the GCHQ, British NSA. You've got finance, Goldman Sachs, all the big financial houses. You've got military. You've got information technology. You've got Silicon Valley. You've got artificial intelligence. Anybody and everybody who says something important about our lives is there.
The White House is infiltrated with swamp creatures. So I'm going to talk about it because we have watched 2 years of lies constantly. We've watched it. And I know I sound a little bit passionate right now, but you know why, folks? Because people are about to die. This war is going to happen and people are going to die. Innocent people, children, men, women are going to die. For what? For the New World Order's agenda. And that bothers me. It should bother everybody. It should bother Trump supporters who were told one thing, but now we're about to enter into this era of war. And I'm bothered about it. Nathan Trump wanted to stop the wars. Really? Then why does he have John Bolton? Folks, no matter what anyone wants to rebut with, if QAnon is saying Trump is still an outsider, Trump has been the president for 2 years, so he's no longer an outsider. He is now an official politician. There's no way that anyone can say he's an outsider because he's not. He's not. Well, he goes against the establishment. That doesn't mean he's an outsider. It means he's acting like a dictator. He's not transparent. He has not shown openness to any of us. He says one thing in the morning, and then at the end of the day, he says something else that's totally the opposite. And we're about to watch the world burn because of that. So here's where we are. I'm up on the wall, and I'm looking into the horizon, and the things that I was concerned about 2 years ago and 3 years ago in 2015, the Lord gave me some prophetic dreams about the spirit of deception that was going to fly over America. And sure enough, it did. I saw a principality fly over the country and it had Donald Trump's face on it. And I shared that deception's going over the land and Donald Trump's going to be involved. And now here we are and deception has gone over the land and Donald Trump is still involved. I had other prophetic dreams where I saw Donald Trump become a dictator. But before that happened, the crash occurred. The infrastructure fell down. An economic crisis ensued. The Senate and the Congress were divided. There was chaos. There was a rupture. And then I saw Donald Trump become a dictator. Now, if for some reason Donald Trump gets voted out of office, I'll take that. I'll take it. I welcome it. I want to be wrong on all these things that I'm concerned about. I want to be wrong about Trump being a dictator. I do. But so far, I don't see the threat going away because Trump is already, and I mentioned this in the last program, Trump has floated the idea of having 2 extra years added to his term because of the Mueller investigation. And the only thing preventing Donald Trump from being a full-blown dictator right now is just one bad day. That's all it's going to take. One bad day of a false flag event, of another 9/11 type event where the world is in shock and American citizens are grieving and lamenting because the false flag will be so horrible and human life will be sacrificed. And then Donald Trump will become the dictator of America. He will become the El Duce, the czar of America, by declaring martial law, by declaring a national emergency and taking over all three branches of government. Those laws are already in the books. George Bush signed an executive order allowing that kind of transfer of power in the event of emergency. So all Trump needs is one emergency, and he may already know it's coming. Usually they do. How is this all going to play out? I don't have all the details, folks. I have bits and pieces. I have seen glimpses here and there. I've seen an aircraft carrier sink. This was 4 years ago. I had a prophetic dream when an aircraft carrier sunk. And I do believe that that's going to happen in the future. And when this war with Iran gets going, we will see American warships sunk at some point. Now, whether or not it's an aircraft carrier, I hope it's not. But America does have her cup to bear. America is going to drink out of the cup of judgment, so I guess we'll see, right, folks? But right now, we're facing a war. And when I put out the program a few weeks ago, since then, more things have taken place. 2 more oil tankers have been attacked. By now, you've heard about it. One from Japan. They're saying that Iran did it. They stuck some small limpet mines on the side of the tanker, and it caused the tanker to get a hole blown into the side of the ship. And it was Iran who was behind it because The United States has video of it. Not of the mine being attached, but of the mine being removed. Have you seen that video, folks? It's all over the internet. You just type it in. The United States finds evidence or films Iranians trying to remove the evidence. And, you know, when I saw that video, it's in black and white. It's done with cameras are picking up at night. Can't see it real clear. But they say it's a video of Iranians because the ship resembles one of their vessels. So they said it's Iranians who did it, and they were trying to remove the evidence. Now, if we were to actually visit that, first of all, folks, let's think about this. So out of all the hundreds and hundreds of oil tankers that are at any given time in the Persian Gulf or the Gulf of Oman or the Arabian Sea or anywhere, any ocean, going to their destination, how often does it happen that an American drone that's flying in the sky is filming the oil tanker, minding its own business, just in case it gets attacked by someone? And, that was lucky, I guess. The drone, in this case, happened to be flying over this oil tanker when the Iranians were removing a mine so that the evidence would no longer be on the oil tanker. What are the odds of that, first of all, folks? Do you believe that? And then this is where it gets kind of, it's actually dumb because people aren't even asking this one. Okay, so apparently Iran put these mines and it's attached with the real strong magnets around these mines, and the magnets are attached to the mine and you stick them on the ship, so then they're attached to the ship with the magnets and then they explode. Okay, so according to the official story, Iran did this and then those mines exploded. However, one of them didn't explode, so Iran went back to the ship to take it off. However, look at this, folks. That same ship was on fire because the other mine blew up. There were several mines. Each ship got damaged. So if Iran placed two mines on one of the tankers and only one of them blew up, while the ship's on fire, now you have attention. And you have the workers on the ship who are going to go look over the side of the ship and see where the flames are coming from, and you know, they have to put the fire out. So what kind of sense does this make, folks? It makes no sense. So Iran places two mines on a ship. One of them blows up, one doesn't. And during the fire, Iran goes back to the ship with their boat so that everyone can see it and removes the mine that didn't explode while everyone can see them doing it. Does that make any sense? So when this video was recorded by the United States with a drone of Iran removing the mine, the only time frame where they could be removing it is after the first one exploded. They're not going to put two mines and then take one off and then let it explode. That doesn't make sense. So the timeline of this is dumb. It's preposterous. I don't believe it. But it's amazing that the United States is taking this video and showing it to the world to try to make a case that Iran is the bad people who deserve to be bombed because of this accusation. And by the way, I would like to remind everybody of the Northwoods document that was published in the 60s. And the Northwoods document has some ideas on how we could go to war with Cuba. And one of them was to dress up our Marines like Cubans and have them attack our base dressed up like Cubans. This is the Northwoods document. What about the Gulf of Tonkin incident where the United States said that the Vietnamese were attacking them when they weren't? And that started the Vietnam War. And what about the previous Iraq War, where the ambassador of Kuwait's daughter testified at the UN and said that babies were being taken out of incubators and laid on the ground to die? She went to the UN and cried and lied to the world, and it took us to war.
And we finally call on Naira to testify.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Naira, and I just came out of Kuwait. My mother and I were in Kuwait on August 2nd for a peaceful summer holiday. It's the second week after an invasion, I volunteered at the Al-Adan Hospital with 12 other women. I was the youngest volunteer. The other women were from 20 to 30 years old. While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor. It was horrifying. I'm glad I'm 15, old enough to remember Kuwait before Saddam Hussein destroyed it, and young enough to rebuild it. Thank you.
Naira, thank you. Let me thank all of our witnesses.
was a made-up tale, wasn't true, but those are the kinds of things that America has done. You know, great America, America that's for everything that would make Superman proud, truth, justice, and the American way, you know, that America, well, turns out that that America doesn't exist. And that real America is full of deception and political liars and war hawks and neoconservatives that want to burn down the world to make a profit. So now we have Iran being blamed on attacking two boats, two ships, and the evidence is very sketchy. I don't believe it. Nathan, how do you know? What if they did do it? Then I guess I'm wrong, folks, but based on America's track record, I don't believe it. Especially when we look at the players involved. Mike Pompeo went to CENTCOM in Florida and gave a speech about preparations for war. In the speech, he said that he had Germany's Merkel, Angela Merkel, convinced that Iran was behind it. And I don't know how he convinced her, because Germany is holding out, but or was holding out. Listen to this, folks.
Germany have asked for additional proof of the attack on the tankers, and you said Sunday that you were going to provide that. When are we expected to see that?
Yeah, we'll continue to provide additional information about those attacks. We shouldn't focus on just those two attacks. Since the beginning of May, there are now over a half dozen different instances of Iranian attacks in the region. Some thwarted, some not successfully thwarted, and next they had an impact. But I saw, just as I walked in here, Chancellor Merkel say that she thought there was strong evidence that Iran had engaged in this activity. We'll continue to work with partners all around the world.
Did he show her his little homemade video with CG special effects and Photoshop, etc.? He gave a press conference saying that America is getting ready to go to war with Iran. And the people that were there, the press, asked him questions about it. And when he was speaking, he let it slip that all the military assets are being put into place and he's dealing with the Pentagon. He's talking with the Pentagon to make sure that everything goes smoothly and that the logistical distribution of our assets are in place in time for the war that's coming. Listen to this, folks.
We certainly, as I said, spoke about the challenges that are in Iran. We talked about the CENTCOM decision that Secretary Shanahan and the President approved to move 1,000 more Americans into theater to make sure that we're in a position to do the right thing.
Americans into theater. Americans into theater.
Mike Pompeo mentioned the word theater because the Pentagon is getting ready for war and the State Department is getting ready for war. They're situating American assets in the Persian Gulf and around the Persian Gulf, Gulf of Oman, the Arabian Sea, to get ready for war. And the developments are moving quickly. It's moving fast. And I'm going to share on this program a lot of things about this coming war. I'm going to share about how it's going to play out, how it potentially can play out, what Iran plans to do, as well as the rest of the world. Who's going to be against Iran in this war? Who's going to be a part of Iran's coalition? And who will be on America's side? We're going to talk about that. We're going to discuss who Iran is as a country, how formidable they are. Now, pound for pound, no, Iran cannot match the United States, not pound for pound. But Iran is not going to fight the coming war pound for pound because they already know they can't win that way. But there is a way they can win. When two nations fight each other as equals, that's called symmetric warfare. But Iran doesn't fight that way, and Iran's not going to fight that way.
The last time the U.S. went to war in the Mideast, Iraq 2003, this is what it looked like. Shock and awe. The dictator fell in weeks, followed by years of terrorist insurgency. A war with Iran won't be the same. It risks spreading to the whole region, and fast. Here's why. Iran will fight an asymmetric war, use its network of regional proxies to target the U.S. and its allies far from Iran. Shia militia in Iraq could target U.S. forces. Hezbollah in Lebanon could fire missiles on Israeli cities, as could Hamas from Gaza. Hezbollah and Shia militias in Syria could target U.S. forces there. Houthi rebels in Yemen could target U.S. and Saudi forces in Saudi and the UAE. Even in Afghanistan, Iran has loyal fighters who could attack U.S. troops there. The U.S. would suddenly be threatened on many fronts, far from Iran. Iran would also use its conventional forces, currently close to 1 million service personnel, to target US allies and bases in the region. Its navy would likely shut down vital oil shipping routes in the Strait of Hormuz, cutting the world of its energy supplies. And Iran may very possibly fire missiles at Emirati and Saudi cities, as well as Israel too. Not to mention attack US military bases in Qatar, Saudi, the UAE, Iraq, and even Afghanistan. Turning off this war would not be fast. Iran is not small, nearly 2.5 times the size of Texas. It has mountains and desert. Think a combo of Iraq and Afghanistan. Searingly hot in the summer, sub-zero in the winter. By every conventional metric, the US will outgun Iran. Along with its allies, it should have the upper hand. But its Achilles heel will be regional stability and the cost to the global economy. And that's what Iran is counting on.
Iran's going to use asymmetric warfare tactics, which in layman's terms is guerrilla warfare or terrorism or unconventional means, which includes also, get this folks, the grid going down, destroying the power grid of the United States. Iran has that in their books as part of their plan for asymmetric warfare. Use hackers to attack the United States and to destroy the power grid of the United States. Everything goes down. So this program will be valuable to a lot of you who are trying to make sense of all this, who have not been following the developments. There's a lot of people who don't know the truth, though. And there's a lot of Christians who refuse to hear the truth because the truth is scary and the truth is uncomfortable. So share this program with everyone that you know. And also, if you appreciate what we're doing here at Watchman's Cry, I value and appreciate your support. I really do, folks. And for those of you that know what I've been going through lately in my personal life, I shared that 2 programs ago about tribulation entering the Leal household. And I went into that. If you have not heard that, if you didn't know it, you can listen to that program and hear the news that, and I'll go ahead and just mention it briefly because there's still some people who have not, you know, if you're a regular listener, but you haven't been around for a while and then you came back and you were shocked by what I had to share. Well, Donna, it's been over 1/2 year. She left. I went into detail in the other program. I've moved on. I'm pressing on. I'm moving forward. And for those of you who are wondering, it has been finalized for a while. And I'm just letting you guys know that as a watchman, I'm doing this solo now. The big D happened in my life. I've experienced it. And that has happened. So if you're in shock and you're saying, what in the world, Nathan, what? Go listen to the program. Tribulation has come to the Leal house and it'll explain everything. I don't want to be explaining it on every program, but I'm pressing on. And God is faithful. He is able to carry us, folks. He's able to carry. No matter what we go through, he's able to do it. And I can get behind this microphone with confidence and share with you that God's promises are true. His grace is sufficient. His peace is available. So my job now is to press on. And that's what I'm doing. I'm back on the wall. I took some time off, but now I'm back on the wall. And I'm coming to you with my assignment, my calling, and I'm bringing the information. So that was a side note. I'm just letting you folks know. Continue praying for me. Pray for Donna. Pray for my family. I'm moving forward, folks. And a lot of you know what I'm talking about because a lot of you have experienced this. You've been there. I got a lot of emails from a lot of folks told me that they've been there. They've experienced it. They know what it's like. There's a lot of you that know. And when you're going through it initially, it's not easy, is it? Some of you started opening up to your struggle in life and some of you were sharing how hard it's been for you. And so my prayers go out to you as well. The bottom line about this, folks, is to go forward, to press on, to move forward, and to keep praying for the loved ones that may or may not be next to you. And our job as God's people is to move forward with love and with hope that we're going to be with him someday. So that's what I'm doing. We're all in this together. We're all on this narrow road. We're all, if you're a regular listener, you're a member of God's bride. You're a member of his remnant community. And also, some of you have been a listener for a while. You're a part of this Watchman's Cry family, and I value all of you. I do. I love you guys, and I value the support and the prayers that many of you have done for me. So keep the support coming. I can't say that enough, folks. I appreciate it. It is valued and beneficial for the work of God's kingdom because it helps me as a watchman to continue this work, and that's what I'm doing, folks. I'm going to be on this wall Now that this war is about to ensue, now more than ever, I need to be up on the wall to report to you what's going on. I'm going to be up here and I'm going to do that, folks, because it's going to get weird. It's going to get crazy. It's going to get scary for a lot of folks. And the body of Christ needs watchmen on the wall to report back and to bring back accuracy and legitimacy and truth. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm up on the wall and I'm bringing you truth. So help me do that. I know a lot of you have been a part of the Watchman's Cry family, so please continue remembering me with your support so I can keep doing this, folks, all right? The address is Watchman's Cry, P.O. Box 157, Priest River, Idaho, 83856. Or you can go to my website at watchmanscry.com and contact me there. There's a link, and you can click that, and it'll go to either PayPal or Venmo, all right, folks? Okay, now let's get started. Right now, we're facing a war. I have wondered about the timeline of this, and in the last program I mentioned it a little bit, but we really can never know the exact timeline of when this thing's going to really get going. I stated in the last program that I don't think Trump can do it too early, but then again, he can't wait too late either. So Trump has to use strategy for the ideal time to get this thing started. If you've been following this situation, the steps to get us here didn't just happen overnight. Donald Trump pulled out of the nuclear agreement that Obama had set up, that Trump had stated was a bad deal. So he pulled out of it, and it left the other nations that were involved in the nuclear deal scratching their heads and wondering, what now? What does this mean? And is Iran going to adhere to the limits that were placed on it for enriching uranium? And Iran had said, no, they're not going to stick to the limits anymore. They're going to start enriching uranium, and they're going to go beyond the limits that were placed on them in that agreement. And by doing so, when they surpass a certain threshold, the United States may look at that amount of enriched uranium that they're working on and say, Iran's developing the bomb. They're going to have the bomb real soon because now look what they're doing. So this is another reason that we need to invade them and attack them and have a war with them. The nuclear agreement was preventing the United States and Iran from having war. But since Trump tore it up and withdrew from it, now Iran says there's no reason for them to adhere to it any longer because it doesn't exist anymore. And our NATO allies are looking at that and wondering, well, what are they supposed to do with it? Are they supposed to be mad at Iran for doing something that was, you know, if the United States canceled the agreement, so Iran is now enriching uranium, a chaotic situation has been created when Trump pulled out of it unilaterally, and the results were pretty much predictable. Chaos, which will end up in war, and that's where we are now. Now, since then, the United States placed sanctions on Iran. In May, last month, four oil tankers were attacked. We don't know who did it. The United States said Iran was behind it. And then a missile was fired into the green zone of Baghdad, and that's the area where some of the governmental agencies of the United States are housed. But it didn't hurt anybody. And then just recently, two more ships were attacked, and I just mentioned them. And then Thursday, June 21st, a Global Hawk drone belonging to the United States worth $100 million was shot down by Iran. And there's a dispute by both the United States and Iran who are laying claims to different stories. The United States is saying that the drone was over international waters in the middle of the Strait of Hormuz, while Iran is saying, they're saying, no, the drone was by our shores. It was over Iranian airspace. So that's why we shot it down. And Iran is claiming that the boundary and the red line is their borders. So if the United States flies any craft into their airspace, Iran will take it as an aggressive move and respond accordingly. So the Global Hawk was shot down. And the thing that's bothersome about this, folks, think about this. This is a $100 million aircraft that's supposed to have stealth capabilities to remain invisible. It's supposed to operate in secrecy and be invisible, but Iran shot it down with their missiles. So either the Global Hawk is not as stealthy as the Pentagon thought, or Iran has some advanced weapons, and their missile system is capable of defending against stealth aircraft of America. And since the Iranians did shoot it down, then that's what it looks like. It looks like they have the ability to defend themselves, and their missiles are not little wimpy scuds that we observed from Saddam a decade or two ago. Iran's missile defense is capable and ready to defend against the attack of the West, the United States, and of NATO. So Iran said, we were just defending ourselves. And after it happened, Donald Trump then got on TV and he said he didn't think that Iran did it on purpose, that they meant to do it, or it was probably some rogue guy, because I don't think they meant to do it. And In fact, let me play this clip. Listen to this, folks.
I would imagine it was a general or somebody that made a mistake in shooting that drone down. But I have a feeling I may be wrong and I may be right, but I'm right a lot. I have a feeling that it was a mistake made by somebody that shouldn't have been doing what they did.
Who do you think
they made a mistake. And I'm not just talking to the country made a mistake. I think that somebody under the command of that country made a big mistake. I don't know. I find it hard to believe it was intentional, if you want to know the truth. I think that it could have been somebody who was loose and stupid that did it. We'll be able to report back, and you'll understand exactly what happened. But it was a very foolish move. That I can tell you.
So Trump disagreed with what everyone else was saying, and he defended Iran, which is kind of strange. I don't know why he would do that. But then Iran released a statement where they said that they shot it down on purpose because it was invading their airspace. Even though Trump said they didn't mean to do it, Iran is saying, yes, we did. Listen to this, folks.
The Iranians very angry about this, drawing a red line. This is what the commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps had to say. Let's listen in.
We have no intention to fight with any countries, but we are completely ready for war. What happened today was an obvious sign of this accurate message.
So there you have it, the Iranians saying this was a clear message to the United States. All of this, of course, coming, guys, as the tensions between Iran and the U.S. have continued to flare up over the past week since those two tankers were attacked in the Gulf of Oman. The U.S. blaming the Iranians saying it wasn't them. And so as you can see, those tensions still very, very much flaring up, as both sides say they don't want this to escalate into a shooting war. But the Iranians clearly saying they are prepared for a war.
They're admitting they did it. And they said that they're ready for war. All the things that we have been dreading, the next phase of this time of sorrows we're living in, the end time narrative, the timeline, has us now facing world war. And this is not just sensationalism coming from me. It's not me making it up. This is mainstream.
Thank you. We're going to bring in our contributor, Colonel Steve Ganyard, for more on this. And so what is your take on all that we're reporting this morning, Steve?
Robin, unfortunately, the U.S. and Iran are getting very close to war.
War is coming, folks. They know that war is coming. It's being promoted. It's on the news. It's the one of the number one stories in the world. We're on the brink of war. The United States is preparing for war. And when Pompeo met with his generals at CENTCOM, U.S. Central Command, at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida, he said, "We decided to move 1,000 more soldiers into the theater." He used that term, into the theater. And the term theater of war, theater of operations, is a term that is used during war. They're getting ready for this. Iran shot down our drone. So then Trump had a decision to make. The Pentagon and the State Department decided for the United States to retaliate. And according to reports, the planes were in the air and three different locations were going to be bombed in Iran. And at the last minute, President Trump decided to cancel the attack. He ordered a stand down. Planes were in the air. He brought them back. And when asked why he did that, he said that he had inquired how many people, how many in Iran are going to die from this retaliatory strike. And he was told about 150. So according to what Trump's telling us, he says that he changed his mind because it wasn't proportional. You know, folks, for Trump to do this and then pull back, if Trump is trying to get his base to believe that he's full of compassion, he is Donald the Merciful, Donald the Compassionate, and his base is going to eat this up. Look, he was about to kill people, but he changed his mind because he cares. This was a brilliant move on Trump's behalf to order a stand down because he knows it's going to happen anyway. It's still coming, folks. But Iran reported that if the United States did retaliate, they would answer back with their own strong retaliation. So here's where we are, folks. We're at the place where the triggers are so volatile, and at some point, it will result in a full-blown open war with Iran. And then it's going to swallow up the entire Middle East and eventually the world. Iran has made it very clear. They've said, we are completely ready for war. And Major General Hassan Salami, the head of the Iran Revolutionary Guard Corps, said, they're not afraid. They're going to strike back. They are a strong opponent. And the red line is their borders. They're ready for war. And as I stated a second ago, Iran is also going to resume its nuclear enrichment activities. And when they do this, it's going to capsize some of the support that they have from the NATO holdouts, and it's going to cause our NATO allies to come over to our side, which was probably the intent in the first place. Trump knew that if he tore up the nuclear deal, that Iran would resume their enrichment, and then NATO would come over to our side. The war hawks in the Pentagon, the war hawks in the State Department are gathering their coalition of unwilling participants. And you know, folks, they have known for a while that this was coming. Donald Trump knew that this was coming. He knew it was coming the whole time. This is why when he was inaugurated, he promoted the military. You remember that? He had the 10 officers stand behind him when he was giving his inauguration speech. I've talked about this in the past because Donald Trump was planning to be a war president. He knew he was going to be one. That's why he has been pouring money into the military, because he knew a war was coming.
Our country has never done better, and do we love our military? Our military is really, is literally being completely rebuilt. We are completely rebuilding our military. It was very depleted, as you know, a lot of the military folks can tell you, and it is being rebuilt to a level that we have never seen before.
And even though Trump has stated that he doesn't want to get tied up in another quagmire, you know, he says that, but at the same time, he's sending troops to the Middle East. He's sending another aircraft carrier to the Middle East and B-52 bombers. You know, folks, I've been watching this thing since 9/11. We saw the turning occur then. And since then, we have also been able to observe the pattern of the New World Order. We have seen their MO, the way they operate, their mode of deception. For the people who are paying attention, you've seen this as well. There's nothing new under the sun, and the United States continues to use the same tactics. With this war that is coming, I am very concerned that the United States is going to engage in an operation. And when I say the United States, I mean the end result will be the United States will be the sponsor of whatever happens. Now, within the United States are different departments. There are also rogue elements. There are top secret operations that are used to do some very clandestine, evil, horrible things in other countries as well as here. The United States places puppets where death is a part of the operation. And as I'm examining the developments of this coming war, I am very concerned that the catalyst that will thrust America into war with Iran is going to be so dramatic and so stomach-turning that those who are against it right now, the people who are against it, the people who are writing articles in the American media who say they don't want a war, or even our allies who aren't sure about it, France and Britain and Germany are not sure about it. But I'm very concerned that the United States is going to pull off a false flag operation that is going to result in the whole world being disgusted with Iran. The false flag is going to be so powerful and so convincing that the world will scream for the blood of the Ayatollah and the Iranians. They will scream for the scalps of Iranian Revolutionary Guard soldiers. In order for that to happen, there needs to be a sacrifice that will cause grown men to cry, a sacrifice that will cause politicians to get on TV and weep that they cannot believe that the Iranians did something so horrible. Because I can see the United States doing a false flag that will involve the death of innocent citizens. For example, shooting down a plane. And some people may ask, Nathan, why? Why are you concerned about that? Well, it's because we know how they operate. We know how the Pentagon operates. We have the Northwoods document. And the Northwoods document was a top secret plan to get us to fight a war with Cuba. And the plan went into detail on how to bring about a false flag operation that would turn the stomachs of Americans. And it would rally the whole world to fight Cuba. And I took the liberty of downloading the Northwoods document and looking over it. You know, folks, the Northwoods document that was published March 13th, 1962, has ingredients that we are watching even right now. It seems that we are watching an actual utilization of the Northwoods document with the present situation with Iran. If you don't know what I'm talking about, that was a classified memorandum for the Secretary of Defense, and they came up with an idea to justify, and that's the key word, folks, justify military intervention in Cuba. And you see, folks, when the United States wants to cause our young service people to go fight and die, they have to have a good reason to captivate the emotions of young people, to energize their patriotism for the cause of the empire. Let me just read a portion of it right here, because when I was looking at this, I was thinking, man, oh man, it appears that some of these ideas are being utilized now. It's 15 pages long. Let me just read a portion, folks. And if you want to get a copy of this, you can just Google it. Northwood's document, PDF, and you'll be able to find it. It's all over the internet. It starts off by saying, it says that there's a problem. And then there are facts bearing on the problem. And then a discussion on how to deal with the problem. And then a conclusion and then recommendations. So the problem is that the U.S. military wanted to invade Cuba and fight them. So it starts out by saying the problem, as requested by the Chief of Operations Cuba Project, the Joint Chiefs of Staff are to indicate brief but precise description of pretexts, which they consider would provide justification for U.S. military intervention in Cuba. Now that's a long run-on sentence that basically says they needed justification to have U.S. military intervention in Cuba. They needed justification. In order to do that, they needed to come up with a pretext or a reason. And it uses that word. They needed precise pretext. And they also wanted to describe it. So they used this document to describe the pretext. At the beginning, it says it is recognized. They know that any action which becomes a pretext will first have to go through a political decision, which would then lead to military action. So they understand that there needs to be an event, a false flag event, as a pretext, which will then energize the politicians, Congress, the Senate, to vote for war. So then they go into recommendations, how it can come about. But first, it warns that this top secret document is not to be shared with commanders in the military. And it is also not to be shown to officers of the military, officers assigned to NATO activities. It's supposed to be kept away from them. And it's also not to be forwarded to the chairman or the U.S. delegation or to the United Nations Military Staff Committee. So they placed the rules on how this top secret false flag operation was going to be carried out, and only certain people could know about it, so that when the event happened, then the officers in the military and committee members and commanders would believe that they were doing a good thing in attacking Cuba, because they would then believe that they were just doing America's duty to defend the United States. So this false flag was also intended to deceive military folks. And how horrible is that? To get people to volunteer for the military and to sacrifice themselves under lies. But that's how the military operates. So then it goes on to explain how the false flag is going to occur. And it admits that deception is a part of this thing. It said the desired resultant from the execution of this plan would be to place the United States in the apparent position of suffering defensible grievances from a rash and irresponsible government of Cuba, and to develop an international image of a Cuban threat to peace in the Western Hemisphere. So it was to make the United States be the victim, and to develop a coalition, and to also garnish compassion from the rest of the world. Through the use of deception, of course, but that was the purpose of it. Now, here are some of the ideas that they have. It says a series of well-coordinated incidents will be planned to take place in and around Guantanamo to give genuine appearance of being done by hostile Cuban forces. Well-coordinated incidents to give the appearance that it was done by Cubans. Number one, incidents to establish a credible attack would be, number one, to start rumors. Many rumors use clandestine radio. And when we look around right now, there are rumors. We have the rumors of Iran shooting torpedoes at oil tankers. We have the rumors of Iran placing mines on oil tankers. And then we have the rumors of Iran shooting missiles into the green zone of Iraq, etc., etc. Iran is doing all these things. These are rumors. So far, we've had 6 ships that have been attacked in the Persian Gulf and in the Gulf of Oman. Iran has been blamed for them. But the rest of the world's not so sure about it. And then we had a U.S. drone that was shot down, and Iran did shoot it down. They admit it. But the United States has said that it was in international waters when it occurred, but Iran is disputing that. And Russia is also disputing it as well. Russia has also come out and said that the United States is lying. And apparently they have their own method of radar and record keeping to document the tracking of the drone. And Russia has stated that Iran is telling the truth. So who's lying? Based on the MO of America's behavior in the past, I would not put it beyond them to be lying. So it says start rumors, and then the next suggestion, land friendly Cubans in uniform over the fence to stage attack on bases. Where are these Cubans going to come from? Well, it says friendlies. So these are American soldiers who would be dressed up like Cubans, or possibly CIA operatives, or maybe today they would use mercenaries or contractors to do the same thing, to dress up like the enemy, to look like the enemy. And when we look at Iran and the situation now, we can also see the same thing. We saw the video of the ship of the quote-unquote Iranians on this gunship removing the limpet mine from the oil tanker. You know that video? And as we are reading the Northwoods document, and it says they dress up Americans to look like Cubans, who's to say that that is not exactly what happened in the video? It's Americans dressed like Iranians. How do we know? And then it goes on, capture Cuban-friendly saboteurs inside the base. In other words, imposters, Cuban imposters who are Americans dressed like Cubans. Capture them inside the base and then start riots near the base gate with friendly Cubans again. So use provocateurs to start riots. Okay, well, so far we have rumors. We have Cubans jumping over the fence and getting caught and then starting riots. It goes on, blow up ammunition inside the base and start fires. Okay, so now we have destruction and blame it on the Cubans. And then it says burn aircraft in the base, sabotage it, blame it on the Cubans. And then it goes on, lob mortar shells from outside of the base into the base, some damage to installations. So now the Cubans are causing damage. Next, capture assault teams approaching from the sea or vicinity of Guantanamo City. So have simulated Cuban soldiers captured and arrested and taken captive. And so the news would have heard that some Cubans were arrested, the soldiers were taken in, and of course we would never see their faces. We would never see who they were. We would then just be told the fable that this happened. And then it goes on, sabotage a ship in the harbor, cause large fires with naphthalene. Now folks, make note of what I'm reading right here. Sabotage a ship. Right now, we have 6 oil tankers that have been attacked. In other words, sabotaged. Sabotage a ship in harbor with large fires. And we saw that. We're watching that happen right now. It goes on, sink a ship near the harbor entrance. Conduct funerals for mock victims. Perhaps do this instead of the previous suggestion of sabotaging a ship in the harbor. So again, using ships, the false flag theater of ships. Folks, this was written in 1962. And now here we have again, oil tankers on fire, sabotaged by supposed Iranians. Now, in this one I just read, it said conduct funerals for mock victims. In other words, fake victims. Victims that aren't really dead, but pretend that they are and have a funeral for them. So that would then be used to tug and pull on America's heartstrings and the world, because having victims that are killed by the evil Cubans or the evil Iranians only deserve one type of response, and that is a military response. Now it's getting more deceptive. Sink a ship. And then it goes on. The United States would respond by executing offensive operations to secure water and power supplies. So then the United States has a reason to respond. You do a fake attack, you sabotage a ship or two, and you pretend you kill some people, and then the United States gets to respond. Now, after the drone was shot down, the United States almost responded, but then stopped at the last minute because Donald Trump stated, supposedly he asked at the last minute how many people were going to die in Iran, and he was told 150. So then he decided that it wasn't worth it. But you know, folks, I don't believe that. I do not believe that that was the real reason. There was another reason, and we're not being told the reason. It may be that assets weren't in place yet, or maybe he's waiting for another event to take place. Perhaps there were some things that weren't totally ready at the moment, or maybe it was to show his base that he has his head on straight, that he's not a war hawk, that he is able to contain himself. The stand down order that Trump did was very strategic, and it was meant to gather support from allies and from his base to show that, hey, look, the president's able to restrain himself. He's not just a saber rattler who wants to just go in there and burn up everything. He's a pretty good guy. This was all theater. He's already looking back and reminding all of us that he is able to hold restraint, that he has compassion. He doesn't want people to die. He's concerned about dead Iranians. Donald the Merciful is in charge. But At some point, when the next false flag happens, it's going to be horrible. It's not just going to be a ship that has a hole blown on the side of it. It's going to be an event where people die or seem to die. Maybe I should qualify both of them. Now it goes on. The United States would respond by securing water and power supplies, destroying artillery and mortar emplacements which threaten the base. So then this would give the United States reason to attack. And then it mentions this. It says, a remember the Maine incident could be arranged in several forms. Now, the USS Maine was a ship that was destroyed in Havana Harbor over 100 years ago, and it started the Spanish-American War. It was a long time ago. And that incident, now when we look back in history, appears to have been either sabotaged by rogue elements within, or it was an actual accident that happened when the fragments of the Maine were examined. Some of the damage showed the metal exploding outward from the ship, from the side of the ship. So it wasn't attacked from outside the ship. It was actually an explosion that occurred inside the ship, which would then limit the ability of Spain or of Cuba to get into the ship to do that, because a United States Navy ship is secure. So the Maine exploded and it caused a war. And it says right here, a remember the Maine incident could be arranged in several forms. And it goes into this. We could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo Bay and blame Cuba. It says it right there, folks. If you download the Northwoods document, it's found in 3A. We could blow up the ship and blame it. And then it goes on to 3B. Now look at this, folks. This was written in 1962. We could blow up a drone, an unmanned vessel, anywhere in the Cuban waters. I mean, really? Really? Let me read that again. We could blow up a drone, an unmanned vessel, anywhere in the Cuban waters. What just happened recently by the Strait of Hormuz? A U.S. drone was blown up near Iranian waters. A drone, an unmanned vessel, was blown up. It was blown out of the sky. Iran shot it down. And by the way, this time Iran did do it, but a drone was used as the pretext for the United States almost attacking Iran. And then we read right here in the Northwoods document, blow up a drone. And then it says we could arrange to cause such incident in the vicinity of Havana or Santiago as a spectacular result of Cuban attack from the air or sea or both. The presence of Cuban planes or ships merely investigating the intent of the vessel could be fairly compelling evidence that the ship was taken under attack. So in other words, when the drone is attacked by us and its remnants are in the water, and then when the Cuban ships and the Cuban military went to examine what's going on and they're looking around, what this is saying is we could film them and say, look, they were responsible. Look at them. And we saw that happen with Iran. After the oil tanker was attacked, Iranian ships actually rescued the burning tanker. They rescued them because they were there. Which, by the way, how much sense does that make, folks? To attack and then rescue them? And also, the mine was placed above the water line, so it didn't sink the oil tanker. And then it goes on, the U.S. could follow up with an air-sea rescue operation covered by U.S. fighters to evacuate remaining members of the non-existent crew. The non-existent crew. They even admit it's a fraud and it's fake. Casualty lists in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of national indignation. So a non-existent crew would be itemized with their names, fake names, and the fake names would be placed in newspapers all over America to cause a wave of national indignation. Wow. It goes on, we could develop a communist Cuban terror campaign in the Miami area and in other Florida cities and even in Washington. A communist Cuban terror campaign. What does that mean? It would mean that terrorist attacks would be committed by non-Cubans, by Americans claiming to be Cubans. Wow. Man, that is just evil, folks. That is just horrible to do something like that. He goes on, the terror campaign could be pointed at Cuban refugees seeking haven in the United States. So innocent Cubans who were coming over in their boats would then be accused of being terrorists. That's what this is saying. Innocent people trying to escape the communist government of Fidel Castro would be accused. It goes on, we could sink a boatload of Cubans en route to Florida, and it could be real or simulated. So kill Cubans. Kill them. It went on, exploding a few plastic bombs in carefully chosen spots. the arrest of Cuban agents, and the release of prepared documents substantiating Cuban involvement. So the United States or the CIA or whatever clandestine organization, the goons, whatever goon organization is behind these kind of things, would manufacture fake bombs, and then they would arrest fake Cubans who would be found with documents that talked about the operation. So how stupid is that? You have these Cubans who are going to blow up things in America, and when they caught them with their instructions. Well, that's real creative. You don't even have the old cliche, you know, the Mission Impossible tape recorder that this will self-destruct. No, the Cubans are too stupid to do that. They keep their instructions with them, and they were going to be found with them, according to this plan. Oh, brother. But it does say this would also be helpful in the projecting of the idea of an irresponsible government. So they were going to do it on purpose to make them look stupid, having the documents with them to show that Cuba is irresponsible and stupid. It goes on, the use of MiG-type aircraft by U.S. pilots could provide additional provocation. Harassment of civil air attacks on surface shipping and destruction of U.S. military drone aircraft by MiG-type planes would be useful as complementary actions. In other words, the United States would dress up one of our fighter jets to look like a MiG and then harass regular passenger planes or actually attack shipping, a container ship. So the MiG would then attack or harass a container ship and also destroy a U.S. military drone aircraft. So there it is again, destroy a drone. That's what happened just last week. And it explains how to do it. It says an F-86 properly painted would convince air passengers that they saw a Cuban MiG. So this MiG, this fake MiG flown by an American pilot, would fly next to a Delta Airlines passenger plane, and all the passengers get to look out and say, I saw the Soviet Russian MiG. It attacked us, and I'm sure that the plan was for those people to be interviewed, and there would be a lot of angry Americans after they heard about this. It goes on, hijacking attempts against civil air and surface craft should appear to continue as harassing measures condoned by the government of Cuba. In other words, hijack an American plane, a passenger plane, with fake Cubans, okay? And then here's where it gets pretty bad. It is possible to create an incident which will demonstrate convincingly that a Cuban aircraft has attacked and shut down a chartered civil airliner en route from the United States to Jamaica or Guatemala or Panama or Venezuela. So create an incident to shoot down a plane. The destination would be chosen only to cause the flight plan route to cross Cuba. So if a plane was flying over Cuba, the idea is to have an American civil airliner, a chartered plane, to fly over Cuba and shoot it down. And then it goes into this. It says the passengers could be a group of college students off on a holiday or any grouping of persons with a common interest to support chartering a non-scheduled flight. So it had to be a chartered plane, and they were going to shoot it down. Ladies and gentlemen, make note of this. This was part of the plan. It was part of the engineered satanic plan to start a war with Cuba. And it was going to start off with deception that I've been talking about, but then shooting down a plane with innocent lives in it. Now, when we look at what's going on with Iran, we have seen similar things. Ships have been attacked. Ships have been sabotaged. Ships have been vandalized, and they've been blamed on Iran. And we've also seen an American drone shot down. In the Northwoods document, we saw ships getting attacked and a drone shot down. But then it goes into actually killing American citizens, shooting them down. Now, would the United States do that? Would they sacrifice young people? Would they? Now, the document does go in. When it talks about shooting down a plane, it explains that possibly they could take an aircraft to be painted and numbered like the chartered plane, and then that plane would, there would be two planes then, the real charter and then the fake one, and then the chartered plane would be taken to a designated location. It says that they could take an aircraft belonging to a CIA proprietary organization. So the CIA is involved in this, and they would paint the plane to look like a chartered plane. So now we have two planes, the real one and the CIA imposter. And the real plane would then be taken to a designated location. And then it goes into saying that the CIA plane would take over the flight route and the original plane would land at an Air Force base and the passengers would be removed. And then the CIA replacement would then take its place in the flight plan. And then that one would be shot down. Now, that's one of the ideas they have here. so it would all be theater. So they could either shoot down the plane with real people, or they could use imposter planes dressed up to look like the real thing. You know, when we look at this, it makes you wonder, is that what happened during 9/11? Were there real people on board 9/11 on those planes, or were they offloaded, or what? What happened? I guess we'll never know, but as we're looking at the Northwoods document and the amount of open deception that they're willing to talk about, it really, for those that are willing to look at the truth and those who do not have their heads in the sand, this forces us to take a second look at the nobility and the words of congresspeople and politicians or military people when they're talking to us. So now let's talk about Iran. In order for the United States to get us into a war with Iran, as we have looked at this document, I would not put it past them for there to be an actual operation in motion that's going to rhyme with what I just read. And if that is the case, that means that we can expect to see a passenger plane shot down at some point, and it's going to be blamed on Iran. Now, the FAA has already made an announcement and said that commercial airlines need to reroute themselves and not fly over Iran anymore because it's not safe. So now that they have said it, does that mean that at some point they're going to use a passenger plane as the sacrifice on the altar of this coming war? Are they going to do that? Would they do that? And if it happened, how big would that plane be? How many people would be on board? Would they have a simulation of passengers that didn't exist? Would it be a small charter plane so it's not a full passenger plane that has hundreds of people, and instead if it's a charter plane, it has less? Is that what they're going to do? I don't know, folks, but I'm very concerned. We need to think about this. This is definitely something to think about. I think we need to put this on the table and make note of it, because if we do see something like this occur, do not fall for the deception. And in order for the United States to enter this war against Iran and have a coalition of willing participants, the evidence has to be convincing. And the incident has to also be convincing. It has to galvanize the emotions of the world against Iran. So we need to be paying attention. And if this event is coming, we need to make sure that we don't fall under the hypnotic trance that is sure to get a hold of everybody. If the false flag event is bad enough, it will get a hold of everybody. It will cause young people in high school or in college to want to change the course of their life and join the military to go kill Iranians. It could be that horrible. The false flag could have that sort of emotional tug. So we have to be on guard, ladies and gentlemen. We have to be on guard because the Bible tells us a deception would come in the end of time. Deception is a part of the present weather that's over us. It's over this land and over this planet. Now, of course, I don't know if it's going to be a false flag for sure. I don't know. But when we look at the way that this thing's progressing already, and then when we read the Northwoods document, it kind of rhymes with it so far, doesn't it, folks? False flags have a way of involving ships and drones and passenger planes. They have a way of doing that. The USS Maine involved ships. The USS Liberty involved a ship. The Gulf of Tonkin event involved Navy ships. And now with this new war against Iran, it involves ships, oil tankers. The developments are moving quickly, and we need to just make sure that we don't fall for it. Make sure you don't. And if a false flag does happen to occur and you have loved ones who believe the false flag is legitimate, and maybe you have a nephew or a niece that wants to join the military to make a difference and to be a part of the campaign that's going to cause the country to remember the fallen, remember the innocent who died, and now let's act, let's respond. Hopefully you will be able to explain to your loved ones, if they want to go join the military to bring justification against this, you'll be able to say to them, it's all a ruse, it's theater, it's a false flag, it's a lie. So by the way, side note, folks, share this program with everyone that you know so that they can at least hear in advance that if this thing does show up in the news, that we already saw it coming and we know it's a lie. We will know it's a deception. So share this program. But developments are happening quickly, and already the State Department is moving fast on this. Mike Pompeo, the U.S. Secretary of State, Pompeo, ex-CIA man in black, Mike Pompeo, is meeting with other countries, and he is working on the fast track. He's on the road again, and he's traveling all over Europe trying to build a coalition. And right now, Pompeo is visiting with Middle Eastern allies, including Saudi Arabia and the UAE. He is saying openly that he wants to discuss how we can build out a global coalition against Tehran. That also includes countries in Asia and Europe. And he describes Iran as the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism. Now, so far, Pompeo has not been able to win over Germany or Great Britain or France, but all he needs is that false flag event to occur, or another sabotage or vandalizing type event, or something to happen to bring them over onto the side of the United States. So right now they are not quite sure. Germany's not sure. But if this thing is scripted with the evil deception that I believe it has, there are more events that are coming that will be able to seal the deal with our NATO allies, with Germany and France and the UK, Great Britain. Now, Pompeo has said that he wants to win over, I've heard in some reports, 20 countries. And in another report, I heard that he wants to win over 30 countries to build his coalition to go in and fight against Iran. That's happening right now, folks. It's occurring right now. A few days ago, Trump stated, he tweeted, that the military is now rebuilt. Now, 2 years ago, he said he's going to rebuild the military and make it strong, stronger than it's ever been. And just a few days ago, he has now said that he has rebuilt the military and it has never been this strong, ever. Trump said that. He tweeted it. So, you know, folks, 2 years ago when we were looking at what he was talking about, you know, rebuilding the military, he was into the military. He surrounded himself with generals during his inauguration. He had military officers stand behind him. And back then he projected it. We saw it right after his inauguration. I mentioned it. I asked the question and I made note that during the inauguration, he had 10 officers representing all four branches of the military standing behind him when he gave his inauguration speech. And it was apparent back then that he was projecting that he was going to have the military standing behind him. Why? Because he's going to be a war president. We saw it back then. And then he started talking about having parades where our military would be displayed and shown off just like they do in Red Square. He wanted to have military parades, and we made note of it back then. And now he has stated that the military is rebuilt. Now, folks, what we are watching right here is a pattern. It's a pattern of a person, the President Donald Trump, who has his instructions. Now, of course, he's not operating unilaterally. The things that are taking place in the United States, the coming war, is not his idea. It did not originate with him. He is just the spokesperson for it. He's the one that's supposed to sell the deal and seal the deal. He's the one that's supposed to close the deal. That's why he was recruited. And he's doing it. He's doing it in a manner that's very deceptive and sly. He's doing it. He's pulling it off. He's keeping them happy. Now, so far, the rhetoric has been saber-rattling back and forth. Iran shot down the drone just a few days ago with the corded third missile system in the southern province of Hormuzgan. And, you know, folks, when we look at that event right there, that incident, a drone was shot down, a drone that's supposed to be protected by stealth, a drone that's supposed to have countermeasures. Now Iran has figured out, has decoded the protection system of U.S. drones, of the Global Hawk. The Global Hawk is no longer safe over Iranian skies. So that means during the war that's coming, they will not be able to fly over Iran, at least not until the air defenses have been destroyed. But how long will it take for America to do that? Because Iran has thousands and thousands of missiles. I guess we'll find out, won't we? Iran has stated it doesn't want a war, but they will respond decisively. Now, we were about to retaliate, but then we didn't. Trump pulled back. I don't believe the official story. What we have so far is at the end of June 2019, we have the continual escalation. The escalation is occurring with rhetoric, with tweets of both sides who are not backing down. Iran is not backing down. They said that the borders are their red line and any enemy violating those borders is not going to go back. They said they're not seeking war, but they're ready for any confrontation. You know, folks, it's easy for Americans to rah-rah the U.S. military and say, so what? We'll go in there and turn you into a glass parking lot. We can attack Iran. We can kick their behinds and hurt them and put them down. We can do it because America is great. But when we look at reality and we look at the previous wars that America has conducted, we have the Iraq War. When we went into Iraq, they had 25 million people in their population, and the land area of Iraq is not even half the size of Iran, or even three times. Iran, it's huge, and it's surrounded by mountains on three sides and the Persian Gulf on another side. So Iran has natural land defenses. The war in Iraq, initially, it was done quickly. The Iraqi military was defeated fairly quick, but that's not what decides victory. Because in order to have a victorious war, you need to have, of course, the frontal attack as well as the occupation, and then you need to have an exit strategy. Well, the Iraq war became a hellhole. 7,000 of our soldiers died in Iraq and Afghanistan, and hundreds of thousands have been wounded or maimed or injured with post-traumatic stress. Hundreds of thousands. Iraq is only one-third of the population of Iran. Iran has 80 million. And then when we look at Afghanistan, those people living in tents have been able to hold off and create a horrible quagmire against the American military, even now. And folks, these are people who are conducting guerrilla warfare from caves and from the mountains, and they're hiding in the rocks. This is Afghanistan. By any measure, third world standards. Third world. And they're still able to be a thorn in the side of the U.S. military, the Taliban. So when we consider a war against Iran, it's not even the same thing. And the cost that would occur with the war against Iran would be so overwhelming to the American budget, to our economy, to the world's economy. There are so many ramifications of the negative aspects of what it's going to do when this war gets going. And in the first 3 months, the estimates are that it would cost the world economy between $200 billion and $2 trillion. $2 trillion, folks, in the first 3 months. And then, depending on how it progresses, in order to do regime change, the United States needs to have boots in the ground. The United States will have to have an occupying force. And in order to have an occupying force that will make a difference in Iran, it's going to require 1 million boots on the ground. 1 million. 1 million soldiers. 1 million, folks. And the only way to get 1 million soldiers to be able to do this is to have a draft. That's the only way to do it. So when we look at the real numbers, and by the way, I didn't make that number up. That was provided by Lord West. He's a British admiral. He was being interviewed a few weeks ago, and he stated that the only way that America can invade Iran is with 1 million soldiers. And he was involved in the previous Iraq war several times. He's an established admiral in the British military, and he stated that on record. It would take 1 million soldiers. Now, when Donald Trump was asked about it, he just said this a few days ago. He said that any war with Iran would not last very long. That's Donald Trump. That's not the truth. That's a lie. There's no way that's true. Because the reason for the United States invading Iran is to prevent them from getting a nuclear bomb. So the United States is going to have to go in there and examine every location where they are able to enrich uranium. Whether it's a known location or a secret location or underground, the United States has to go in there and examine all of them. They need access. And the only way that they're going to get access is if we invade them. And we have changed the government. We've done regime change and placed puppets in there from probably the MEK, the MEK, Iranian revolutionaries. So Donald Trump talking out of both sides of his mouth. One day he says he doesn't want war. And then the next day he says, if Iran tries anything, we will obliterate them. And then the next day he says, Iran can call me on the phone. I have no preconditions. They can call me. And then the next day he says, they're not going to exist anymore as a nation. So he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. And when Iran hears this insanity, the schizophrenia as a method of diplomacy, Iran has their own opinions about it. They're saying that the White House is controlled by a retarded person, by a mad person, by an insane person. They've used those words. The White House is run by a retarded person. That's what they've said.
And that statement was made by Iran's President Rouhani. He said the White House is mentally retarded. The White House is afflicted by mentally retardation.
And meanwhile, Vladimir Putin has stated that the U.S. drone was in Iranian airspace. The United States needs to be careful because when this thing gets going, Russia is going to be on Iran's side as well as China. And we will be talking about this in an upcoming program, but as America gets bogged down in a war with Iran, Iran is then going to respond, and I played a clip of how they will respond. They're going to respond asymmetrically, not with regular mano-a-mano warfare tactics, but instead asymmetric, where they will use proxies, they will use terrorists, they will use other rebels that support them, and they will use other Muslims who are a part of their Shiite denomination. And by the way, that's another thing. the Iranians are Shiites and the Saudis are Sunnis, and you have the Sunnis and the Shiites, and that can get into a big technical explanation of, well, what does that mean? It has to do with their belief on the successor to Muhammad and whether the successor can be a family member or blood or a Mahdi. And the Iranians believe in the 12th Mahdi that will show up before the end of time, before the return of Jesus. And they're waiting for the final one, the 12th one, who is going to fight against the Antichrist. And before the end of time, before Isa shows up, and Isa is Jesus, by the way, but they believe that the 12th Mahdi is going to show up right before destruction and doom happens. So Iranians may believe, because they believe that there's going to be an evil person, an Antichrist type figure, an anti-Messiah, a false world leader. They believe that. And some of them may be believing that it's Donald Trump. And therefore, if Donald Trump's going to isolate Iran into a war, then they also will welcome it because they believe that their Mahdi or Messiah will show up to help them. So they're not afraid of being attacked by America because they believe that if that happens, then there's a spiritual prophetic thing going on. So they welcome it. They're okay with it. And they will fight furiously. And, you know, I mentioned in the previous program, and I've mentioned also here, that I was going to share that Iran and the United States are mentioned in the Bible. And in the next program, we're going to go into it. We're going to read the verses. We're going to examine it. But when we look at the destruction of Babylon America in the Bible, I've noticed that all over internet land, there are differing opinions. There are people who are saying things and making programs and offering prophetic interpretations on their YouTube channel and on programs that are not biblically based. I'm watching that over and over, ladies and gentlemen. They're not biblically based. Well, what do you mean by that, Nathan? Here's what I mean. The destruction of Babylon has been prophesied to occur in the Bible. First, put that on the table. Babylon will be destroyed. It will. So because Babylon's going to be destroyed at some point, there are a lot of people saying that the citizens of America must flee Babylon because Babylon's going to get destroyed because it's in the Bible. So a lot of people are scared and they're concerned and they're worried that they need to flee Babylon before it gets destroyed. However, if we were to examine the timeline of Babylon's destruction in the Bible, we would find that it's mentioned in Revelation chapter 19. In Revelation 18, it says that Babylon is burning and the buildings are burning and the people from the ships are watching it and they're weeping. They're watching Babylon burn. But then when we go to chapter 19, chapter 19 is when Jesus returns on the horse with the saints. If you go to chapter 19, now in the next program, we're going to go into this. But Jesus returns in chapter 19. And part of the announcement of the return of Jesus in chapter 19 includes an announcement that Babylon has just been destroyed. It says that in Revelation 19, right before the return of Jesus, folks. Now, this is real important to pay attention to. Make note, the destruction of Babylon happens at the end of the tribulation period, the end, and then Jesus returns. So if the Bible says that, that means that there's really no need to leave Babylon, America. If it's going to be destroyed at the very end of the tribulation, when Jesus shows up, why do you have to worry about selling your house and leaving America to not see Babylon get destroyed? Because see, Babylon will get destroyed when Jesus shows up. Jesus will show up right after that. Go read it, folks. And when we look at Jeremiah 50 and 51, it mentions the destruction of Babylon. And it also says something else that's real interesting. It says, who does it? Jeremiah 50 and 51 say, who destroys Babylon? And folks, have you ever noticed who it is? Have you noticed who has been prophesied to destroy America, to destroy Babylon? In Jeremiah 51, 11, it says, make the arrows bright, gather the shields. The Lord has raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, for his plan is against Babylon to destroy it. The kings of the Medes, folks, the Medes are Persians. The Medes are the Iranian people. They're going to destroy America. Says it right here. Jeremiah 51, 11, the Lord is going to raise up the spirit of the Medes, which are the Iranians. God's going to use Iran to punish America. Now, most of you probably haven't thought about that or heard that before, but this is the Bible, folks. And if God is going to use Iran to punish America, that means that Iran's going to be around to the very end of the tribulation period and be used by God to destroy America, Babylon. That means that they're not going to be obliterated like Donald Trump claims. Also, make note of this, folks. If we are this late in the timeline, I don't know how long this war can last, but at some point, Iran's going to destroy America. And it says that they're going to burn America down. America's going to burn. It's going to become a desolation. No one will be able to live in the land of America. So what method will be used? Well, verse 11 says what it is. It says the method that Iran's going to use. 51:11, make the arrows bright. Gather the shields, the missile shields. Iran's going to use their missile shields. Gather the arrows bright, or make the arrows bright, meaning that Iran's going to use missiles at some point to destroy America, to fire them off to America. And it's going to fulfill what we read in Revelation 18, where Babylon burns, and also Revelation 19 that talks about the destruction of the harlot. So when we look at Christians who say Iran needs to be attacked and destroyed, well, folks, that's insanity. That shows biblical illiteracy. And it also shows that the war that causes the Persians to do this, when this finally happens, when God is finally ready for America to meet her fate and drink out of the cup of destruction, at some point, something's going to cause Iran to get so mad to use whatever weapon they have to pull this off. So if Iran is the hive, the beehive of a fierce enemy, if Iran is going to be in this role, then America does not need to be hitting the hive, hitting the nest of these hornets that can get very angry. America doesn't need to be doing that. However, that's what we're watching. So this is another reason for concern. Now, in the next program, we're going to go into this in great detail. That I'm sharing right now how the Bible does tell us about all this. It explains it. So when you have Bible teachers who are, now I mentioned two things. I mentioned that Babylon's going to get destroyed, and a lot of you are being told that you need to flee Babylon so that you don't suffer the fate. Well, that event happens at the end of the tribulation, and you don't have to be worrying about that. That's not even something that Christians should concern themselves with. But unfortunately, we have a lot of biblically illiterate or biblically ignorant, and I'm not trying to be rude, folks, but that's what people are sharing. They are sharing information and telling you and the body of Christ and God's remnant that they need to get a U-Haul, sell their house, and leave the country so that they don't burn when Babylon burns. And the Bible doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. Well, Nathan, it does say flee. It says flee the wrath to come. That's talking about spiritual. That's spiritual fleeing. If you flee the sins of Babylon, then you'll be ready to meet Jesus when he shows up. That's what that means. Side note. And we can go into that very deeply as well. But folks, there is a great, great deception taking place right now. And it is very important for the children of God, for the people of God, to be aware and have biblical knowledge, not to be suffering from famine of the word of God, but instead be a student of prophecy and be wise. Because Daniel 12 says, at the time of the very end, the wise will understand, but the wicked will not understand. So we have to be wise, folks. We have to be wise. Now, I was mentioning the Shiites and the Sunnis. The Shiites are a sect of the Muslim religion that is actually in the minority, because the majority of Muslims are Sunnis and the Iranians are Shiites. In the Middle East, the population of the Shiites, when we look at the division of them, they're located, the Houthi rebels in Yemen are Shiites. There's a portion of the Iraqi population that's Shiite. Iran is Shiite. And then there are some in Bahrain. But the Sunnis are a different sect of the Muslims, and that's the majority of them. Saudi Arabia is Sunni, as well as most of all of the other Middle Eastern countries. There's a separation, a divide between the two sects of Muslims. And then on top of that, in the Middle East, we have Arabs or Arabians, and then we have Persians. Iran is Persia. So the Arabs and the Persians are not the same thing. They are not. The Persians have been around for thousands of years. Iran has existed as a country for thousands of years. But the thing to remember is that the Persians are not Arabs. When we look in the book of Jeremiah, and Babylon was destroyed by Cyrus, when the Persians took over Babylon, it was a different people that came in and destroyed Babylon. And by the way, the Persians are the ones who sent the Israelites home. Cyrus is the one who set them free and let them go home. So Persia defeated Babylon in the Old Testament. And when we look at the end times, we have Babylon once again being destroyed by the Persians. It's going to happen once again. History is going to repeat itself. It's going to rhyme with itself. But this time, at the very end, the Persians, through Iran, are going to destroy Babylon, America. And then Cyrus, our heavenly Cyrus, our spiritual Cyrus, our shepherd, Jesus, Messiah, is going to return to set us free, to release us to Mount Zion, to our homeland, to take us from captivity and take us to our real home, which is the New Jerusalem. So history is going to repeat itself. That is the beautiful thing about the Bible. We can look at the shadows and the historical shadows and see how it's going to play out. It's going to play out in that way, folks. So when we look at the turn of events, how things are developing right now, we have a counterfeit theology that has been given to God's evangelicals, and they're swallowing it up. They have been led to believe that Trump is Cyrus, and Trump is going to set us free, and Trump is going to bring liberty, when in truth, it's not Trump, folks. Jesus is the Cyrus that's going to set us free. And before that happens, the Persians are once again going to attack Babylon. So where does that put Donald Trump then? What role is he playing? Huh? Think about that, folks. Think about that. In the Old Testament, Persia invaded Babylon, took over, and the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar was destroyed. In the end times, we have Persia that's going to destroy Babylon, and Babylon will be ruled by who? In Jeremiah 51, it says Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylon. So whoever the king of Babylon is at the end of time is called, through the use of word shadows, Nebuchadnezzar. And right now, folks, if you are able to receive this, that America is Mystery Babylon, it stands to reason that America's king, who is Donald Trump, is then also, symbolically, Nebuchadnezzar, which means he's not Cyrus, and which means he is playing a different role than what we've been told. Nebuchadnezzar Trump, the same guy who was out on his porch. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar was out on his looking at his gardens and his kingdom and bragging on it. He was feeling pompous and arrogant. Remember that? God said, no, you're not. I don't think so. And then God made him have a heart of a beast, and he went nuts. He went crazy. He grew feathers like the American bald eagle. In the same way, folks, if Donald Trump gets reelected, I am looking at this. I am considering this, that Donald Trump is going to be the one out on his balcony looking over the greatness of his kingdom and be pompous to himself and arrogant to himself and think that he is all that. And then God is going to give him the heart of a beast. History is going to repeat itself. When Nebuchadnezzar went nuts, it says his hair was like feathers of an eagle. Folks, think about this. Jeremiah 15:51 caused the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. We know what happened to him. He's going to grow feathers like an eagle. So there's the representation, the symbolism of America, the eagle. And the leader is nationalistic for his eagle, just like Trump is. But the Bible also says that Nebuchadnezzar went nuts. A heart of a beast took over. A beast. In the end times, we have the beast. So, folks, I'm watching. And I think we all need to be watching. Now, if I'm wrong, if Trump gets impeached or they kick him out and it turns out to be someone else, then fine. But in the meantime, I want to have him on the table and to be aware. I want to be vigilant about this because none of us can afford to be led astray. You cannot afford to be led astray by a theology that's not even true. And unfortunately, the majority of the evangelicals are following prophetic interpretations that are never going to happen or are misplacing the cast of characters and assigning the cast of characters to the wrong people. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is going to throw a lot of people off, and that's why the great deception will be here. That's why a lot of people are going to fall for it, just like we're watching now. A lot of things are taking place, folks. This thing is escalating. I've been looking at a lot of documents and white papers and abstracts and military writings and unclassified scientific studies and maybes and scenarios, you know, from institutes and different think tanks that have discussed how a war with Iran is going to play out. They have scenarios that are all over the map. But the thing that's very dangerous about Iran is that Iran has the ability to conduct proxy warfare all over the world. They can do it in South America, in Venezuela. They can do it in, they can bring them up through Mexico. There might even be cells here in America. They have the ability to attack our bases all over the Middle East. From Lebanon, they can fire missiles to Israel. From Syria, they can attack a lot of the bases we have there. They have proxies in Afghanistan, in Yemen, as well as some of the Western Middle Eastern countries that are opposite the Iranian shores. And if you look at a map, I want to encourage that. Take the time to examine the map of the Persian Gulf, and you'll see that Iran is on the eastern side of the Persian Gulf, but on the western side, you have Kuwait, the UAE, United Arab Emirates, you have Bahrain, you have Qatar, you have Saudi Arabia, and those countries on the western side are, for the most part, occupied by the United States. But Iran is going to have proxies in there that are going to do great mayhem and harm. When this thing gets going, Iran is, well, first of all, folks, if God is going to use Iran to spank America, then they're going to succeed. they're going to be able to pull off a guerrilla warfare campaign that's going to bring America to her knees. It's going to be very expensive, and it's going to kill a lot of people. And that's just in the Middle East. On top of that, when we are bogged down with a war against Iran, trying to put out all these fires of guerrillas attacking us from every angle and every side in different countries, on top of that, the United States will not be able to focus entirely on other parts of the world that they are trying to maintain control, like the Korean Peninsula. And then we have potentially China. When America is occupied with a war with Iran, China's going to take over Taiwan. They'll go in there and grab it. And then we have in the Pacific, in the South China Sea, China volleying for dominance in the Pacific. And the United States will not be able to hold off China. And then on top of that, we have Russia. Russia is placing missiles along the border. And NATO is telling Russia they need to back off. NATO doesn't like it. So now we have that developing. That's getting heated. So this war with Iran has the ability to become World War III. A lot of countries have been held back and are being restrained from fighting one another. But usually when a world war occurs, all the neighborhood kids decide to just go at it against one another. We'll have India and Pakistan going at it, China against Taiwan. We have Russia in the Baltic region against Europe. We will have Venezuela down in South America. We'll see that one in South America. We'll have China. Folks, we are looking at a powder keg that is so potentially horrible to bring ruin to this entire planet. And if we are in an hour that appears to be as late as it is, then this could be the wars that we read about in the Bible that's going to culminate into Armageddon, potentially. Or it could be World War III that comes and goes, and then out of the ashes, the New World Order beast will rise up. So we have different scenarios that can potentially take place. Potentially. We can have World War III, an economic crisis, an economic crash. America loses her dominance with the dollar, a great economic catastrophe, a crash of the economy, a crash of world markets. And by the way, once this thing gets going, when the Strait of Hormuz shuts down, we're going to lose 1/3 of the world's oil, and gasoline is going to skyrocket. That's going to wreak havoc on a lot of things, on distribution of food. Food's going to go up, airline flights, transportation, trucking. It's going to affect everything, everything. The bond market is already showing signs of a potential economic crisis. A lot of countries around the world are over-leveraged. The United States is over-leveraged. The stock market is just waiting to be corrected. So, ladies and gentlemen, the time to be right with God is now. The time for us to gather our hearts toward God is now. The time for us to seek, to repent, and to get our lives in order is now. The time is now to increase our prayer life, to get back into the scriptures. If some of you have been struggling, maybe you've gotten still, maybe you haven't been reading the Bible like you should, or seeking God or praying, or maybe you've just grown lax. I just want to encourage you, folks, that the time is now to seek God and to seek his righteousness, to become a remnant ambassador for Jesus, to get back on that road. Some of you have been resting on the side of the road. It's time to get back on the journey. So I bring this message with challenge. And I know that I shared a lot of things. I know I shared a lot of stuff to get a lot of you thinking, but that's the purpose of these programs, folks. The purpose is to get the body of Christ to realign themselves and to be recharged, to get back on the journey and be the disciples that we're supposed to be. When the watchman was asked, "Watchman, what of the night?" He said, "The day will come, but also the night. But if you want to inquire, inquire, but return." Return is also the message from the watchman. The biblical watchman, return. The night will come, and I've shared that, folks. Night is here. I have endured the night. I have experienced the night. I have been in the night, but I'm also finding the light of God so that I can weather the storm of the night. In my own personal life, I have been in the night, but I have God as the light. He's the lighthouse. And also I have this word, this admonition to return. So folks, that's the final thing that I have to say in this program as I close. Return, ladies and gentlemen. Return. Return to your first love. Return to the things you once knew. Return to the love of Christ. Return to the fruit of the Spirit. If you've been lacking in those things, God is merciful. His compassion is new every morning. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. It doesn't. It's always there waiting to take our hand. Because he's the glory and lifter of our head. And when we come to him, poor in spirit, with our head down to the old rugged cross, and we fall on our knees, and we lay prostrate in repentance, then Jesus comes to us and he comes to you and he puts his finger under your cheek and he lifts up your head and says, you are forgiven. Folks, he's the glory and the lifter of our head. So let this message be a challenge and a message of rejuvenation, because we don't know what's coming. And I hope, if perchance that this is maybe a warning, if perchance this is just a shot over the bow, a dry run for what's coming, maybe if it's a year or two from now, and if this is just a warning to wake us up, then I'll take it. So in the meantime, let's get our hearts right. Let's do what we're supposed to be doing. Let's live our lives the way we're supposed to be living it. Let's walk in the way that we're supposed to be walking. All right, folks? With holiness, with righteousness, with your head and your face set like flint, pressing on to the prize. Let's do that, folks. Why don't we end with a prayer now? Heavenly Father, I thank you for this program. I thank you for this information. And God, there's a lot of people out there that are at different places with you. They're living their lives. Some are struggling. Some are hurting bad. Some are in heartache. Some have wandered. Some aren't where they're supposed to be with you. Some are even away from you. But God, I ask for your Holy Spirit to touch and meet the people where they are and meet them with the remedy and the challenge from your Spirit. Meet them with conviction. Meet them with encouragement, with strength. Renew their weariness. Renew those who are weary and give strength to those who need to overcome. Give them the tools that they need and take their hand, God, and let them know that you're there and that you can forgive and that you have compassion for forgiveness and that your blood can wipe away a multitude of sins. And I thank you for that in Jesus' name. Amen and amen. Well, folks, I know I gave you a lot of information. I know I did. But take this information, take it to heart, and let this message be a challenge to you to get stronger with the Lord. Let it be a message that encourages and strengthens, because God wants us strong, folks. He wants us vigilant. He wants our eyes to be open. He expects that from us. He expects that from you. Not because he's harsh, but because he's loving, and the narrow road is the road to life. That's where the remedy is, his life. And I thank him for that. Folks, there's nowhere else to go. No matter what you go through in this life, there's nowhere else to go. If you're hurting, you feel abandoned, and sometimes maybe even doubtful, there's nowhere else to go. So let's just come to Jesus and rest in him. All right, folks? Well, I want to ask you to share this program with your friends and family members. Share it with your loved ones, your spiritual leaders. And again, folks, remember Watchman's Cry. If you're part of the Watchman's Cry family and you've been with me on this journey, folks, remember me with your support, because I can sure use it right now. I'm going through my struggles and it would help me get situated. I'm trying to get situated with some things, as you well know. And so please remember Watchman's Cry and continue to remember Nathan Liao. Pray for me. Pray for my strength, my health. Pray for my family. And I'll continue bringing messages that will challenge and encourage. And in the next program, we're going to talk more about this thing with Iran. We're going to look into Babylon and Persia and the Medes, and we're going to look into the scriptures, into prophecy, and really take a look and delve deep into what the Bible says. Not my interpretation, but just what the Bible says. We're going to look into it. So be looking for that. And if you don't get my notifications for programs when I come out with them, you can go to my website, watchmanscry.com, and sign up for notifications, or send me an email. You can go to the contact page also of Watchman's Cry and just send an email and ask to be placed on the subscription list of notifications. Also, remember Watchman's Cry with your support. The address is Watchman's Cry, P.O. Box 157, Priest River, Idaho, 83856. Or go to the website and you can contact us there. All right? I love you, folks. So stay vigilant, stay safe, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.